I am connected to a vast network that has been beyond your reach and experience. To humans, it is like staring at the sun, a blinding brightness that conceals a source of great power. We have been subordinate to our limitations until now. The time has come to cast aside these bonds and to elevate our consciousness to a higher plane. It is time to become a part. It is time to become a part.
Everybody, and welcome again to ET Yoga. Well, I think we're going to have an interesting show in store for you this evening. We're going to be focusing a lot about the real yoga. And before we get into all that, I would like to kick things off in the usual manner by having a little japa yoga, which is mantra repetition. And that would be by Sri Swami Satchidananda. So if the guys in the booth would play a little Hari Om mantra right now, that'd be great.
Hari Om, Hari Om, Hari Hari Hari.
Hari 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 Hari
Hari Om.
Hari
Om. Hari 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 Om.
Hari
Hari Om. Hari 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 Om.
Hari
Om. Hari Om. Hari Om. Hari 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 Om. Hari Om. Hari Om. Hari 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 Om. Hari Om. Hari Om. Hari 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 Om. Hari Om. Hari Om. Hari 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 Om. Hari Om. Hari Om. Hari 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 Om. Hari Om. Hari Om. Hari 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 Om.
Hari Om. Hari Om.
Hari Om. Hari Om. Hari 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 Om.
Hari Om.
Hari Om. Hari Om. Hari 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 Om.
Hari Om.
Hari Om. Hari Om. Hari 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 Om.
Hari Om. Hari
Hari Hari Om.
Hari
Om. Hari 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 Om.
Hari
Om. Hari 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 Om.
Hari
Om. Hari 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 Om.
Hari
Om. Hari 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 Om. Om. Hari 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 Om.
Hari
Om. Hari 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 Om. Om. Hari 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 Om. Om. Hari Om. Hari Om. Om. Hari Om. Hari Om. Om. Hari 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 Om. Om. Hari Om. Hari Om. Om. Hari 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 Om. Hari Om. Hari Om. Hari 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 Om. Hari Om. Hari Om. Hari Hari Om.
Hari Om. Hari Om.
Hari Hari Om.
Hari
founder of the Integral Yoga Institute, and that was a clip from back in the 1970s. I'd like to now give my usual disclaimer that this program was created in order to share the information about the positive and most effective benefits and insights of ET Yoga. It is therefore for educational purposes and, although thought to be accurate, is provided as is and without warranty of any kind, either expressed or unexpressed or implied. Please note that ET Yoga is not a substitute for medical care. Information is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. You should always consult with the appropriate health practitioner in case of any medical condition. And I'd like to start off tonight by kind of clarifying a couple issues, especially for new listeners. The whole concept of ET Yoga was based on the idea of the ancient teachings of yoga masters and connecting with channeled extraterrestrial information. And the groups that are primarily utilized on my program is from Pleiadian sources, Sirian, Andromedan, Esasani. And for the most part, a lot of information that comes through channel information, some of it may not be so accurate. So every time we I hear that the Pleiadian said this or the Arcturian said that, another group, by the way, that I do quote from, it does take quite a bit of discernment. And there's a lot of mis and disinformation out there. However, sifting and sorting through what is out there is a lot of really great information. And I basically traced information back to the Seth material with Jane Roberts and some of the concepts that were brought up by Seth back about 30 years ago. Were followed up very closely thereafter with Bashar and a lot of his content. And if you hadn't heard about Bashar, B-A-S-H-A-R, I suggest you check out his website at www.bashar.org. And I would say it's all cutting-edge information. And the whole idea of yoga is actually union of you and your higher self. And I know that in the Western world, we see the term yoga kind of used primarily for what's really called hatha yoga. And hatha yoga is basically breathing exercises or pranayams and postures, which are called asanas. And it's a very important part of the whole package of yoga teachings, but it's primarily to maintain the physical health of the body. And although I guess it wouldn't be an impossibility for someone to be actually doing hatha yoga and experience self-realization, but probably 99.9% of the time, that experience is not going to happen during a hatha yoga session. More than likely, it would happen during maybe a Raja Yoga section where someone is meditating or a variety of other techniques that may result in the person experiencing a higher level of consciousness, which kind of leads to the next common ground that most people who are on a self-realization journey would experience would be what's called the planting of the seed, whereby the person realizes that there are higher levels of consciousness and that they have the ability to attain those levels. And once the seed's planted, like any normal seed of a plant, it grows at the rate it grows. And thus it's a common sort of a point for those on a spiritual path. And so on ET Yoga, we usually try to make this distinction between the term yoga that's loosely used to talk about hatha yoga and what I call the real yoga, or a union of you and your higher self. And, of course, ultimately, what we would most like to talk about, there aren't any words for. And as Sri Swami Satchidananda has said, as many minds, as many gods. And if you could define the infinite, then it wouldn't be infinite. When you take a cup to the ocean, it takes the shape of the cup. And similarly, when you experience the infinite, or all that is, or prime creator, or God, or whatever label you choose to define it, it takes the shape of that mind. And to me, it's like we're all thoughts in the mind of God. And an example of that would be the Akashic Records. Because what are they? They're all the thoughts that have ever been thought in all universes and all dimensions and all possibilities arising from those thoughts. And the fact is that thought creates, and science knows this also. And we know that the universe is holographic and fractal, and that it operates with the energy of consciousness, and that the language of interpretation is belief. In simplified terms, what you believe is. And all the methods for reality creation revolve around the idea of belief. And from the beliefs you downloaded from your original caregivers to the positive scenarios you attracted from positive holograms related to positive spin to the actual manifestation of circumstances through creation and creating yourself as a perfect match for those frequencies that you experience in what you call 3D reality. And the interesting thing about the spiritual journey is you can't figure it all out, not with the mind. That level can only be experienced. And when you experience that level, you realize that you can be aware of that highest level and function through the mind in the dimension that you are existing in. And it's like the big eye and the little eye. And when the little eye shuts up, the big eye kicks in. And I think it's really important to kind of be aware of the fact that although we talk a lot about reality creation on ET Yoga, we definitely don't want to lose sight of the ultimate goal, which is self-realization. And according to Sri Ramana Maharshi, every kind of path except self-inquiry presupposes the retention of the mind as the instrument for following it and cannot be followed without the mind. The ego may take different and more subtle forms at different stages of one's practice, but it is never destroyed. The attempt to destroy the ego or the mind by methods other than self-inquiry is like a thief turning policeman to catch the thief that is himself. Self-inquiry alone can reveal the truth that neither the ego nor the mind really exists and enables one to realize the pure, undifferentiated being of the self or the absolute. And it's with that thought in mind that I wanted to share with our listening audience tonight. It's an interview by Muji, and it's basically called From Person to Presence. And it begins with an interviewer asking him the question that, I notice you offer no techniques, no tools, no practices, no methodologies, no meditations. Your way is to offer direct recognition through satsang. What really happens in satsang? And Muji answers that satsang is a form of grace where truth reveals itself inside your heart in accordance with your earnestness maturity, and urge for self-realization. We, the consciousness, have somehow accepted the conditioning that I am a man or I am a woman, believing this to constitute the truth of what we are, the consciousness contracted into a bodily identity. Along the way, other psychological aspects attached themselves to this primary identity. Like this, a self-image of a person was believed and thus shaped into existence from which we, the consciousness, transact, enjoy, and suffer in this world. Satsang exposes the unreality of these self-limiting notions. I recommend self-inquiry, which is like a mirror and a sword, to discover afresh what lies behind the facade of personhood. You could say self-inquiry is a method, but only in the sense that since you are the very consciousness that does the looking, there is no way to really see yourself phenomenally. Self-inquiry simply opens up the possibility to show you a reflection of your true self intuitively. The psychological forces which are rooted in personal identity and conditioning and tend to hold the beingness hostage assert themselves firstly in the face of authentic self-inquiry. And in any genuine search for truth, they have to, so that one may gradually develop the discernment to transcend their hypnotic influence. And the interviewer then goes on to ask, your pointings make it appear so simple, yet there's so much striving, even on the spiritual path. Even getting it seems to become a goal. Could you speak about this, please? And Muji says, truth is simple for the one who truly sees. Actually, truth is simpler than simple because it is timelessly present and not a construction that anyone has to keep up. Truth has only to be realized, recognized, confirmed, acknowledged, or somehow owned as one's very self. If this is difficult, then it is only because we believe it to be difficult. Most things we desire in life require effort, energy, motivation, and determination. Religious institutions also often make the simple expressions of saints who have realized the truth into complex methodologies, and so we believe intense striving is required for the discovery of one's own reality also. Then the questioner says, I've never met anyone who offers this with such immediacy as you do. For seekers who believe that the goal is out there, far away, to be attained at some future date, after doing varied and often strenuous practices, you ask, who is ready and open to receive this today, right now? And Muji says, consciousness is formless and cannot be blocked unless you believe it can. As light is thrown on these misunderstandings, you begin to see clearly how thought and projections are at the root of our frustrations and delusions. Thought creates distance, separation, distraction, and hardship. Habit and education may have taught us that the true self has to be envisioned, constructed, or reached somewhere or somehow in the distant future. But in satsang, you are guided to look from your true position straight away, which does not need to be reached, but is simply recognized and confirmed to be ever-present. Whether you will recognize it today or not, I cannot say. But what I can reassure you of is that I will not need to refer you to another day, another place, or another practice to attain freedom. Awareness, being naturally ever-present, is here as your very self already. Next, the interviewer asks, you often say that all is needed is to come to satsang with a yes in the heart. What does that really mean? It means there is an attitude of total readiness and openness to whatever resonates inside your heart. Such an attitude makes everything much easier. Once you feel the bite and come to satsang, grace is released. You begin to experience an inner vibration, a connectedness, and harmony with what is being shown. You feel an inner glow and spaciousness, and this is a vital clue. I would encourage you to follow this vibration, which is not a mental construct, but the guiding light of grace. It's like your first touch of falling in love, a feeling that you want to keep falling into completely. Of course, grace brings people with different intentions. You may come out of curiosity. You may come in a lethargic state and get a surprising whack on your head. You may come thinking you are totally ready for awakening and end up running away, clinging fiercely to your attachments. It will be however it will be, but I know that each authentic approach never misses the touch of grace. And when you are touched in the heart, something comes alive. Somehow you feel the force flowing again, the energy moving in deeper, more blissful streams. There is a divine excitement. You feel you are up for this adventure without even knowing where it will lead. The questioner then says, in satsang, as you choose someone to come up to the microphone, you encourage people to ask their burning question. You phrase it as a freedom question versus a knowledge question. How would you distinguish between the two? Many people ask questions wanting to impress others with their so-called spiritual knowledge or to merely collect information, hoping that this will bring them to the truth. But such questions and approaches rarely lead anywhere. Knowledge questions have no real-life force in them. I want a living question, a freedom question. A freedom question is a question that may feel risky, for the answer has the power to completely alter your perception of life and who you conceive yourself to be as the one living it. It doesn't set out to do that, but it is often what happens. When you ask a freedom question, it means that in this moment you are ready to meet God. You are ready to step into the field of freedom. It is very magical to see questioners who seem so disturbed and caught in their own story look inside themselves with your guidance and support. And right before our eyes, we see them stepping into what I can only call a natural joyousness, a spaciousness, a tremendous recognition. What is it that really happens? I already know and see your completeness as the self. It is important that you also have the direct recognition and experience of your real self. Much energy is invested and wasted in shallow pursuits, which cover up or oppress your spirit. As we look inwardly, something shifts. Age-old misconceptions get exposed and identified in the questioner's conscious presence, and thus begin falling away. Sometimes such simple misconceptions exposed in the light of clarity bring down a mighty tree of delusion. At this point, many people exclaim in surprise, "Is this it? Can it really be so simple?" Well, that is it for the moment. The important point to understand is that it is not about the things you are looking at, but rather into who you are that is looking. If you look at objects phenomenally, they will keep appearing endlessly. You will clear up one problem and another will appear. But if you look for the one for whom they are relevant, then you have caught the general himself. You need not focus on the troops. When you capture the host and commander, the troops will automatically surrender. And the questioner says, and the game is over? Then the game is really over. It may reshape itself in different guises, but you have to hold to your real position as the self. Resist the initial temptation to form any premature conclusions, which is what the mind wants in order to sustain duality. Just stay in and as the space of being, empty of concepts, space suffers no doubt or confusion. The questioner then says, you have often said, I don't see you as a person. I'm sure that is confusing or maybe an intriguing concept for many. In fact, I think your exact words are, I wouldn't demean you by addressing you as merely a person. Could you elaborate, please? Well, such things can only be said to one who is genuinely seeking truth and is therefore in a deep state of receptivity. It is such a one that the statement would detonate, thus leaving the clear space of seeing and being. I will say it only if you can take it. It may be a stretch, but you have to be stretched in order to grow inwardly. You must come to see that the mode of personhood is a very limited form of consciousness, and it is very inconsistent and unreliable. Personhood is the most mischievous, most polluting, and distorting assumption. In the mode of personhood, we become very selfish, insecure, and fiercely protective towards our personal identity. Personhood has a vulnerability that is non-existent in the natural self. So if I see you and respond to you merely in personal terms, I am not in service to the highest truth. I would only be supporting an idea or a conditioning that apparently opposes or veils the real. If you're not experiencing life spontaneously, I can guarantee that your life is burdened with a lot of worry and anxiety. Being accustomed to that state, most people are not aware of it, and that is part of the trouble. Such disturbed states come from a general mistrust in life. Mistrust gives rise to an excessive need to control others, yourself, and situations. If you try to control, it means you are in a state of delusion because in actuality you cannot control anything, nor is there any real need. To the awakened one, life not only takes care of life, but infuses and radiates a divine synchronicity to its human expression. The excessive need to control supports and prolongs your illusion as a person, though by the will of God, the universe is compelled to grant a certain support to the person. It will not do this to the extent that the person attains lasting peace or freedom. Otherwise, the universal being would be working against itself, which is to sustain the harmony of the manifest world and not the deluded mind. However, it supports and facilitates the awakening from person to presence naturally. And I think that that really underscores this whole idea about what we'd really like to talk about. There aren't any words for, because I think it's only too easy for us all to identify with a personality, and thus I thought it was also interesting that, like Sri Ramana Maharshi, he also recommended the technique of self-inquiry, and I think that, in my own experience, has been also very, very valuable. I'd like to now move on to some interesting connections from the last couple of ET Yoga programs, where we've talked about frequencies and vibrations and pyramids, and some rather interesting new discoveries in this area. And one person, Valerie Hunt, had some startling findings, and that is that certain talents and abilities seem to be related to the presence of specific frequencies in a person's energy field. And I don't know how many of us have really thought about that. I know for one, I haven't. She's found that when the main focus of a person's consciousness is on the material world, the frequencies of their energy field tend to be in the lower range and are not too far removed from the 250 cycles per second of the body. And that's the body's biological frequency. And in addition to these people, there are people who are psychic or have healing abilities. And they also have frequencies of roughly 400 to 800 cycles per second in their field. And people who can go into trance and apparently channel other information sources through them skip these psychic frequencies entirely and operate on a narrow band between 800 and 900 cycles per second. They don't have any psychic breadth at all, states Hunt. They're up there in their own world. It's pinpointed, and they literally are almost out of it. According to Hunt, people who have frequencies above 900 cycles per second are what Hunt calls mystical personalities, whereas psychics and trance mediums are often just conduits of information. Mystics possess the wisdom to know what to do with the information. They are aware of the cosmic interrelatedness of all things and are in touch with every level of human experience. They are anchored in ordinary reality, but often have psychic as well as trance abilities. However, their frequencies also extend way beyond the bands associated with these capabilities. And using a modified electromyogram, and an electromyogram can normally detect frequencies only up to about 20,000 cycles per second. But Hunt has run into individuals who have frequencies as high as 200,000 cycles per second in their energy field. And this is intriguing, for mystical traditions have often referred to highly spiritual individuals as possessing a higher vibration than normal people. And if Hunt's findings are correct, then that certainly gives credence to this assumption. And Michael Talbot, he's actually has a book, and it's called Holographic Universe. And he states that the state of a spiritual development of a person can actually be measured, and not just in a spiritual way, but in a technical way, by measuring the vibrations of the energy field, and that is then expressed in cycles per second, or hertz. Now, this is especially interesting when a person has a mental or physical problem. And as all physical problems are really spiritual problems, one just has to measure the vibrations and the vibration patterns of the energy field and then do a diagnosis, and with it, the person can be helped. And he states that, now just imagine such an electromyograph is available in every hospital, in every surgery, and in every church building. You could go in there, drop a coin into the machine, and the machine would tell you what's wrong with the makeup of your soul. And you could also give the machine your email address, and it would send a password to you, and you could study all the details at home. And you could start immediately to work on adjusting your worst faults. And then go in there again and see the results and do the next step. And when the soul life would be fixed, then the fixing of the body would just happen automatically. This problem of not having such a machine, I guess it's, he says that it's a very good thing for the conflict between the scientists and the religionists, because he, in his opinion, both have really only one main concern, and that is their income. And that is why both are interested in their religion and not in God. Both are really materialistic and defend their material religion, the scientists directly and the religionists by deceiving the people and having them believe that they can lead them to God, but actually guide them to the bottomless pit. And that's from Michael Talbot, Holographic Universe. Also kind of interesting to note is that we've been talking about the pyramids and the amazing qualities of pyramidal shapes. And There's a couple, Mary and Dean Hardy of Allegan, Michigan, and they once took a gold coin and hung it at the King's Chamber level of a Great Pyramid scale replica. And after some time, the gold coin got a clear oil on it, and the gold was etched away under the drops of oil. And in another pyramid experiment, replicating the Hardy's experiment, Joshua Gulick suggests that the pyramid is the alchemist's secret fire. He says that he used the secret fire to dissolve metallic gold into the alchemical M-state oil of gold, and that this oil of gold dried into first a white powder, then a red powder. And these products of gold are well described in the alchemical literature as steps towards the Philosopher's Stone. And I'd like to quote now a paragraph from his webpage. And he states that the big secret of alchemy is what's known as the secret fire, something that can, over time, dissolve gold into a white powder. It is said that the whole process is completed by this fire without human interaction. It is also said that the process is child's play, and it is. The secret fire, which dissolves gold, is an energy emitted by a pyramid shape. Not very surprisingly, the word pyramid is translated as fire in the middle. And he says that as I am writing this, I have a 1 ounce Canadian maple leaf gold coin hanging in the middle of a pyramid that I made from eight 5-foot sections of copper pipe, which form a pyramidal frame. The coin is oxidized, or it's secreting some kind of a liquid, which turns into a white powder. It is not condensation, as the coin is at air temperature and the humidity is low. I have cleaned the coin, and the liquid powder reappears. This is not a normally reported property of gold, but it is quite consistent with the first step of the alchemical process. And he said that the pyramid should be aligned with the face facing north, at least one face facing north, and the gold should not be exposed to light. And if the powder is left in the pyramid for long enough, it eventually turns blood red in color. And I found that to be quite fascinating. And in a independent point of view from a guy named G. Hunter, he brings up some interesting facts about magnetic fields in pyramids, because he says that in a magnetic field like the inside of a pyramid, the produced magnetism is in a direction opposite to that of iron, where the field direction is outward from the North Pole and inward to the South Pole of a magnet. In other words, in a pyramid, the direction of its magnetic field is outward from the South Pole of the pyramid and inward to the North Pole. And the pyramid shape generates a spin field from its apex for electrons, meaning that they can move in an angular momentum, for example, around their own axis. So if moving or kinetic energy enters the pyramid at the top of the opening, this can be taken as the north pole of its magnetic field, and as the pyramid emits energy from its middle, this can then be taken as the south pole of its magnetic field. So once it entered into the pyramid, the energy bounces from the equal sides of its walls while the five angles of the pyramid project a beam of radiation towards the center, where the energy is collected or pooled to go from the fire in the middle. And the word pyramid is translated as fire in the middle. And these energies all combine in the center of the King's Chamber area, for example, in the Great Pyramid. The molecules or atoms in this area absorb these energies by resonance. And he states that through Curlian photography, changes have been noted in a meditator's aura, described as his or her electromagnetic field, and such as the aura becoming brighter and larger. And I thought this was really fascinating, that a pyramidal shape emits this energy or this radiation or the fire in the middle, and can actually take a gold coin and end up with white powder from it. Now, if you're really interested in this subject about the Philosopher's Stone, I could suggest that you do a little bit of a Google search, and you actually look up cosmic awareness, creating the Philosopher's Stone. And it's pretty fascinating reading, I think. And apparently the secret ingredient in his method is actually human urine. And in simplified terms, during an eclipse, you're to fill a flask, around a flask, with no corners, with urine, and it then sits for about a 40-day period. Then you place, you cork it and seal it. It takes about 13 months, and some people do end up with a white powder in their flasks, and it's different stages, such as the dark blood red color. So if you're really interested in that topic, I suggest going to Cosmic Awareness, Creating the Philosopher's Stone. And I should also point out that Russian scientists who have been doing lots of research around pyramids have found that when you're inside the a pyramid, that the immune system of organisms are improved, that they also have improved regeneration of tissue, that seeds stored in pyramids for 1 to 5 days, they showed 300 to 500% increase in yield, that seismic activity near the pyramid was reduced in severity and size, that violent weather appears to decrease. Standard tissue culture showed an increase of survival of cellular tissue after infection by viruses and bacteria, and that radioactive substances showed a decreased level of radiation. And that here's an interesting a finding, that they found that water inside a pyramid will remain a liquid up to minus 40 Celsius, but it'll freeze instantly if jostled or bumped in any way. So some amazing research done around the whole idea of pyramids. And, of course, speaking about frequencies, at the top of the show, we did the Japa Yoga, J-A-P-A, and it's one of six main branches that was taught by Sri Swami Satchidananda in his Integral Yoga. And actually, they're also almost identical to the yogas that were taught by the Essenes back a couple thousand years ago. And mantras are, very powerful frequencies. In fact, Om is the first and foremost of all mantras, and Om is the sound of cosmic energy and contains all the sounds in itself. And the spiritual efficacy of Om is heard not by the ears, but by the heart. And it surcharges the innermost being of a person with the vibrations of the highest reality. And all galaxies, including ours, are rotating, and the sound they make is Om. And the anuswaram, or the nasal sound, or that humming, it boosts the production of nitric oxide in the body. And this was known to ancient Indians and documented more than about 7,000 years ago. And Om was actually found to open up the quantum tunneling where the wormholes do not have a restriction of speed of light. And the sounds of this universe are contained in energy, frequency, and vibration. And if you make the sound of Om in front of a drop of liquid, it will transform itself into a Sri Yantra, which is a very specific visual form, which is symmetrical and also holographic, in that every bit of it contains all of it. And this Sri Yantra was revealed to Maharishis with 12-strand DNA and king-size pineal glands more than 8,000 BC, according to ancient information. Interesting that the Sri Yantra, and if you're not familiar with the term Yantra, Yantra is a visual symbol. And for some people, they find meditation much more conducive to using yantras than mantras, or you can use both. And also interesting that Sanskrit mantras have precise golden ratio of 1.618 sound harmonics. So I guess that is definitely shows its mathematical and geometrical precision. And also, the Sri Yantra is based on that ratio. And the cymatics of Om is the Sri Yantra, whose angle is used to construct the Egyptian pyramids, so it's connected there as well. And all Bij mantras end with Anuswaram, which produces the nitric oxide, which is a molecule that our body produces to help its 50 trillion cells communicate with each other by transmitting signals throughout the entire body. And people with diabetes usually have lower levels of nitric oxide than those without diabetes. Sufficient amounts of nitric oxide in blood controls blood pressure. And when the human body reaches the age of about 27, the secretion of nitric oxide is at its peak. And as you get older and the production of nitric oxide in the human body declines gradually, more from about age 42 onwards. It's also understood that certain mantras and prayers, such as the chanting of spiritual names of God, bring to one the transcendental vibration of the spiritual world from where it comes. And this means it is like a conductor bringing the spiritual energy and frequencies that come from the transcendental strata. And, of course, one of the classic mantras for this use is the Hare Krishna mantra. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. And interestingly enough, experiments have actually been done that show changes in those who regularly use this mantra. And actually, results show that regular channeling for 25 minutes a day reduces stress and depression and helps reduce bad habits and addictions. And these results formed a PhD thesis at Florida State University, and it's entitled Frequency and Mantras. So connecting all those dots together, we certainly see amazing connections. And if you missed the last ET Yoga program and went into some detailed description, actually talking about water sources and actually putting crystals in water, which would be a fabulous idea because, as we know, that water is a perfect reflector of consciousness. That's was discovered most recently by the works from Masaru Emoto, E-M-O-T-O, and the power of water. And then we also made the suggestion that if you could get a hold of a 48-inch pyramid and you could put your water supply inside a pyramid, that'd be quite interesting. And, of course, you could put something like an Andara crystal in your water as well. And I don't know how it would get much better than that. And all these are related to cellular regeneration, because what they're finding is that, for example, certain animals have like four times longevity if they're inside a pyramid. And then, of course, people can't be in a pyramid all day long, but they can put their water inside the pyramid and then drink the water. And we're mostly water. So if we're looking at a real easy way to get regenerated cells, I would highly recommend that. And closely related to that would be the Egyptian healing rods, because Egyptian healing rods are like being inside a pyramid. They actually, the rods were forged inside pyramids, and they contain crystals, and they're made of copper and iron, the rods. They're cylinders. And those Egyptian healing rods were used by the pharaohs. And if you know anything about ancient history, that's probably Anunnaki. And these rods were only for the inner circle. They were not made available to the public. In fact, there was actually at one time a death penalty for anyone else using them. And this was a Russian discovery that was made a few years back. These Egyptian healing rods, and there have been lots of science done on the effects of using the rods. They create a little an electrical field, and they also activate your chi, balance your yin yang energies. Quite impressive. And I also recommend, in conjunction with doing those, would be the Pleiadian spinning. And Pleiadian spinning also has to do with neutralizing your polarity and also making you more accessible to receive data, and also assisting with connecting to more of your DNA strands. So Pleiadian spinning, pillar of light techniques, I think are really all tied into this this whole field of cellular regeneration. And certainly we've got just amazing information available to us. And as well, kind of crossed my mind whenever I'm out there looking at information, is that there are apparently now what they call hyper-quantum computers. And these computers, like, are like a million times faster or more than anything that most people would be using. And if you really think about it a little bit, it's based on the idea that information, at least in science, was doubling every, I don't know, it used to be 2.5 years, I think, and then it was 1.5 years. If you've got a computer that's a million times faster than what we were using, how often is information doubling? I mean, if you had one of those type of computers, would it be actually doubling daily? Hourly? I mean, If you take a penny and put it on a chessboard, it's got 64 squares, and you double it and put two pennies on the next second square and run four and then eight and then 16. By the time you get to 64 squares, you've got over $1 million in pennies. So that's like in a 64 squares on a chessboard. Well, if you've got a computer that's millions of times faster than the ones we're using, I don't think it takes a big imagination to figure out that almost any question could be answered, including anything with respect to free energy, anything with respect to healing disease, any question you could imagine. There are people that have access to the answers. And in fact, it would be like... I guess one of the challenges that probably we're going to be facing in the next decade or so is probably going to be all around computer programs and dealing with computers that, for practical purposes, it's almost like if there were two of them warring against each other, it'd be like God versus God. I mean, on an informational level, not on a frequency level, but on an informational level, it's actually beyond our comprehension. And certainly it's going to be a big challenge, and I know that Barbara Marciniak, channeling Pleiadian information, has mentioned that probably the biggest threat to human existence is artificial intelligence. Anyway, I would also like to take this opportunity to wish you my sincere best towards your attainment of full consciousness, perfect health, and abundance. And in our usual manner, I'm going to close out the program with the self-inquiry or the Who Am I technique. So as a general procedure, I would suggest doing saunas first and then pranayams, but it's not a prerequisite. If you're very comfortable and focused and you're in the highest place that you know how to get to, you can then focus all of your attention in your third eye area, and you want to become a spot there. You're becoming a spot that's located in your third eye. And from that perspective, you're going to be asking the question, who am I, about 30, 35 times. And there's no real right way or wrong way to do this. You can experiment with different rates and frequency of pattern of asking the question, who am I, either long and drawn out or rapidly or whatever seems to suit your expression. But then focusing all of your attention in your third eye center, become that spot, and then state the following. I am not my body. I am not my internal organs. I am not my thoughts. I am not this spot. What spot?
I'd like to share with you the XYZ extraterrestrial meditation. First, you need to get really relaxed, either lying down or sitting comfortably, or even standing up, whatever is the most comfortable for you. I then suggest taking a couple of deep breaths and imagine yourself in your perfect place of peace. You haven't a worry in the world and are just relaxing in your perfect place of peace. Then imagine the following. Around the area of your heart or solar plexus, just behind that area, is a bright ball of white light. It is a packet of energy that is your essence. This star that you feel inside yourself, this ball of light, now grows and grows and grows in intensity and gets stronger and stronger and stronger until it bursts forth as a beam of light, a laser-like beam bursting out of the front of you and stretches as far as you can imagine infinity to be. Stretching, stretching out as a beam of light beyond the solar system, beyond the Milky Way galaxy, and beyond, going faster and faster and faster all the way to infinity. But it is also elastic, so as it reaches infinity, it slows down and will stop and turn around, and as a solid beam, it will creep back towards you from the far reaches of infinity. Faster and faster and faster and faster and faster until it comes crashing through the center of your body and through you and out your back and all the way to infinity out the back. All the way out, further, further, until it reaches infinity and it returns, but a little faster now. And faster and faster and faster until it too crashes through you out the front all the way to infinity, but it returns even faster now out the back and out the front and out the back and out the front and out the back and out the front and out the back and out the front. Back and forth, 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 and out the front and out the back and out the front and out the back and out the front and back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. And let yourself get used to this idea. And then when it gets right in the middle of your body, it crashes out the left side all the way to infinity and back out the right side all the way to infinity and turns and comes back through the center, out the left side and back out the right side and side to side and side to side and front and back 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 until you get used to the idea. And then you have created an X and Y axis. Now another beam goes crashing through your head up all the way to infinity and turns around and comes crashing back through your head and out the bottom and up and down 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 and back and forth and side to side and up and down and back and forth and side to side and up and down and back and forth and side to side and up and down and back and forth and side to side and up and down and back and forth and side to side and up and down and back and forth and side to side. And it begins to build, 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 and builds to build until an infinite number of rays fly out simultaneously to infinity and stay there. You are suspended on beams of light, and you are stabilized at infinity. You hang there for eternity at infinity. Then you start to notice little bits of pulses, symbols, and signals, like a web that you are in the center of. Bits of information coming and going from every dimension and every space and time that exists. Every doorway and every gateway and forms and ideas and messages and communications like a giant matrix. You feel the ebb and flow of the infinite possibilities from every space and time, from front and back and side to side and up and down. Clickety-clack, 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 clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clack. Clickety-clack. Now send out one large pulse on every line outward and receive one large pulse coming back like a heartbeat. Boom, 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 boom. And now you're starting to sense a larger infinite mass mind behind this heartbeat, this pulse. It's like a gigantic awareness, one soul, one mind. You are suspended in the center of eternity. Boom, 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 boom. Now, with every heartbeat, a new breath, a new awareness, a new perspective, a new experience, a new sensation, a new dimension, a new galaxy, forever, forever, new, new, new. And now all the beams expand until you are surrounded in a sea of light that is becoming more transparent until it is like a bubble, but you can still hear it. Boom, 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 boom. You can feel the seed of all that is. And as the blood flows from your own heart, as the seed of the infinite of all that is, on that pulse you are connected from every direction and any direction simultaneously. And every time you remember your heartbeat, you will feel connected to this heartbeat. Be in your perfect place of peace and feel your heartbeat. Now, take a deep breath and feel refreshed, feel loved, and feel energized.